Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Sequel Q&A. My name's Doug. Next week's sequel, The Next Karate Kid. Yes, we're closing out the franchise. All we have left is the second one. And I am so pumped for you to listen to my interview with Ned, actor Michael Cavalieri. Man, Michael is such a great guy, such great energy. And maybe it's because I'm from New Jersey, he's from New York, maybe that's why we had the connection, but such a great guy. And so, of course, we talked The Next Karate Kid, growing up in New York City, how he started acting, one of my favorite movies growing up. You're going to hear a lot about it during our conversation. And that showdown, a karate movie starring Billy Blanks, Michael, Christine Taylor, next month's guest, Patrick Kilpatrick. And then we talked about Michael's other credits. But one thing we really talked about is a new movie that he actually did everything for. It's called Ritenato the Movie. That's the website, ritenatothemovie.com. It's about him visiting his ancestors' hometown in Italy. So he did a really character-driven movie about it. We talk about it a lot during the interview. I'm going to put the link to the movie. It's going to premiere on May 8th. And I'll also put the Instagram page on there as well, just so you can check all that out. And before I start the interview, if this is the first time you're here, thank you for giving us a shot. We have a lot of fun, a lot of great interviews, a lot of great movie discussions. So subscribe so you don't miss out on anything else. And also follow us on all social media at Sequels Only. I'm going to shut up. And now here is actor Michael Cavalieri.
Doug, what's happening, brother?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, man. This is so cool. It's so funny, like, if people look up and down the movies you're in, like Last Man Standing, you know, Next Karate Kid, which I'm sure with the hype of like Cobra Kai, how huge it is, people are like going back, rediscovering this movie that has a ton of people in it when you really think about it. Yeah. But I knew you. We'll get into like how you got started and everything and where you grew up. But I just have to mention this right off the top, was Showdown was like a movie that was, I don't know if it was UPN or where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York, in the Bronx, in Whitestone Queens.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. I'm a Jersey guy, so you know what I'm about to say. Like UPN, WPIX, it was one of those movies that was on every Saturday, because I saw Showdown so many times as a kid.
Come on, I never knew that.
Yeah, it was on one of those channels, but I just always remember that movie because it was... They didn't even like hide it. They said it in the movie that they were like mocking Karate Kid.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, are we on?
We're on. It's not live. I edited this out so we sound good.
Okay, so honestly, when I went for that audition, Doug, it was funny because they wanted me for the lead character. They kept bringing me back, right? And it was a funny story. I never knew. I didn't know that played on UPN at all.
Yeah, one of those local, because we had cable back in the day, but like it was on the illegal black box that my dad got, or it was, but I remember it being on either 9 or 11. Like I remember watching it on like those, which they don't even show anymore on those channels, like those Saturday afternoon movies. And I remember seeing that so many times because it seemed like right around that time that I was watching it is when Billy Blanks, like the fitness craze happened. And I'm like, dude, that's Billy Blanks.
Right. Because what happened was, like I was saying, I had auditioned for it and they kept bringing me back for the lead character, da, da, da. And it was a funny story. I grabbed the actor in the middle of the audition. The guy directed it was from Best of the Best, Robert Radler.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was great. I forget the producer's name. He was really great, too. He worked with Joel Silver later on. But Alan, I forget his last name. Anyway, I was in the audition and I was doing my audition and they started to laugh. And I was just really like, I was just really like edgy actor that just, you know, my mom was very sick and I had a lot of stuff going on and I just stopped the audition. I said, what are you laughing about? What's so funny? Like crazed, you know, and they looked at me and they didn't know what to do. And I said, you know what? I'm done. I walked out. And I walked down the hallway to the elevator about to get in the elevator. He goes, no, wait, you're great. We love you. No. We've never heard the scene read like that. You just took us off by surprise. Da, da, da. Anyway, cut and paste. They went with the exact, like you said, ripoff formula of Karate Kid, which was having a blonde guy fight a dark-haired guy. And they said, Michael, will you please? I said, all right, I'll do this part, but whatever. So, and then cut and paste a year later, I'm playing the lead role in the, you know, in the biggest franchise in the world. So, you know, it's like, it's funny. It's just crazy. But a lot of people, you know, Billy Blanks too. Billy was funny because I remember doing the scene, if you remember, in the gym.
Yeah.
So I said, Billy, I said, do me a favor. I said, you know, we're doing our own stunts. Make sure that you don't hit me in the in the groin region. He goes, no, don't worry about it. I won't hit you. Sure enough, the broomstick comes up, and I'm like, oh man. But there's some amazing actors in that movie. You know, Sadie Lopez, a wonderful actress, and Christine Taylor, and you know, Ken. They're all really good. But Patrick Kilpatrick, who I went on to do another movie with, Last Man Standing. He was in Last Man Standing as well. And time's funny, man. You know, it's just because I see the picture behind you. I'm laughing, man. It's like, wow.
Well, you still look pretty good. You don't age that. You don't age that much.
Yeah, people say that to me all the time. Michael, you look like you're still from the Karate Kid, or you're still, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, I try to take care of myself. And it's, Doug, you know what's funny about this whole thing? It's so bizarre. I mean, let's think about this. Next Karate Kid was 26, 27 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no idea this was even happening. This reboot of Cobra Kai, I had no idea what was happening with it. And my wife says to me one day, she goes, honey, you got to look at this show. I'm like, what show? We talk about, she goes, Cobra Kai. I'm like, what's that? I mean, I kind of knew the reference because it was the first movie, but I didn't really know them. I didn't really, you know. Because you got to watch it. It's like a continuation, a remake of Karate Kid. I'm like, no way. Why would they do that? You know, sure enough, I watched it. Oh, this is pretty good. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting calls from like all over the world. I'm getting calls from Spain, London, India, Pakistan. Because now they're going back to watch all the beginning films. And it brought back so many wonderful memories. And obviously some other, you know, it was during a very tough time for me in my life back in 1994, 95. But it's so fascinating to me, like the love for this franchise and the love for these movies, and to hear people talk to me about my character many years later that I could never talk to. I didn't have Instagram. I wasn't even on Instagram. I don't even know what was going on with that. My wife got me on a year ago. I just started with this stuff. And people started to find me. And it's just fascinating that you can actually now talk to guys like you and have an experience that you would have never had 26 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a fascinating return to the roots and to the movies. And it's really wonderful, actually. It's been really, really fun for me. So
that's awesome, man. Here, we're going to start. I want to talk about like growing up. But one thing I have to mention, it's funny when I interviewed Patrick Kilpatrick, I think like back in October, but for some reason it didn't click when I saw Showdown that's the movie I watched. Cause whenever I interview people, I'll like go up and down and I'll click on different movies and like check them out. For some odd reason, like when I interviewed Eric Roberts, who I interviewed for Best of the Best and Best of the Best Part Two, I was like, all right, I know this. I know those movies. But for some reason with Patrick, I didn't click. But rewatching that movie years later, God, he is such a nut.
You know, like, Patrick, calm down. And he talks with that voice. And, you know, he's a character. He's a good guy.
He's a character when I interviewed him.
Yeah, he's a character generally.
His voice is like deeper than it was then. And it was like so gravelly and just the way he was storytelling. I'm like, dude, this guy is great at what he does, obviously, but just insane. And those roles, that opening scene at the party, like when his brother gets knocked over by Billy and somehow dies instantly. It's insane. Cause he looks, I don't know how old he was then exactly. He looks like he should not have been at that party. Like not even close.
I mean, that's the bizarre thing when you think about some of these movies. You know, people shouldn't even be in these movies. I don't know how do they, you know, it's like, yeah, it was so bizarre. It's just so, you know, we're like 80 years old in a high school film. I'm like, what do we do? You know what I mean? But this is what they do. It's crazy, but fun times, man. Fun times.
So cool. Let's talk about the beginning. So you grew up in the Bronx. So I got my Yankee tattoo there.
Me too. I'm a Yankee, big Yankee fan. Whitestone, Queens, and then I would go and spend a lot of time in the Bronx with my grandmother in Throgs Neck. So more, you know, I grew up in Whitestone, but I would go over the bridge. I went to school in the Bronx, high school there. You know, was a pretty good athlete. Very, very well known in the area. Played all sports. You know, I was very, very blessed in a lot of ways. some tough times started happening, you know, when I was about 18, 19, my mom, like I said, and my father got sick and things happened there. So, lost my mom, lost my dad. And then, about 11, 12 years ago, I lost my sister. But back in the day, back in Whitestone, Queens, I was a pretty good athlete, captain of my high school football team, all city, all league, all that stuff. And, played college football. I thought I had a shot to go pro, but then things got a little bit hectic. I broke an ankle, ripped a hamstring. And I said, where am I going? You know what I mean? You start to realize it when you get to another level. You're like, wait a minute. I was usually better than most in everything. Then I was only just better than one guy in one thing. And he was killing me and everything else. And I said, you know what? Let's be realistic. So
what school did you go to?
I went to CW Post in Long Island. Oh, nice. Division One AA. Played flanker back, tailback, broke some records there, and then I got hurt, and that was the end of that story. And then I started working on Wall Street. And, when I got my degree, I said, okay, you know what, let's do what we got to do. And I started working on Wall Street at night. I was doing, like, night shifts. And I met this gentleman on the train sitting next to me, and he says, you know, you got a great look. And he's talking to me, and I think, you know, who is this guy talking to? This crazy man. And he's like, you know, you look like Ken Wall from Wise Guy. You got a great look.
That's a good compliment.
Right? So I said, oh, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know, here, take my card. So he gives me his card. I'm looking at him, and then he leaves. I'm like, checked it out. I said, oh, this guy supposedly looks like a pretty big, J. Michael Bloom. So a few weeks later, I was like really disillusioned working on Wall Street. I'm like, I don't want to be here, you know. And I gave him a call. And he brought me into the office, and he's sitting behind his desk, and he slides this paper across to me, and he goes, read this. I'm like, read what? He goes, read this scene. And I'm like, how? He goes, just read it. So I read it, and then he stopped me. He goes, listen, you're pretty good. You're a natural. And, I went out on an audition maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, and I got a small part as a bad boy on a soap opera for a couple of days. And then he goes, listen, I'm moving to California. And I had nothing going on, man. I didn't want to work on Wall Street. It was cold. It was January. I was like, you know what? I'm out. And we headed west. You know, maybe like 2 months later, he got together with another lady to manage me a little bit. And then he came back to New York to kind of square away some stuff. And I got a movie called Book of Love for New Line Cinema. And another thing, I was up for the lead, I'm new. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to, I'm trying to get through it, And they kept bringing me back. And we ended up in a nice part in that film with a lot of known actors. And
Chris Young, Bob Shea directed it. And he didn't direct much.
No, that was the only one.
Yeah.
That was the only one. And remember now, it's funny that you say that because Robert Shea was like the owner of New Line Cinema, if you remember. Yeah. So I remember... my mom was getting sick at the time, Doug. And I remember going up to Mr. Shea's house. It was like, not in Beverly Hills, but like going over the canyon. I think it was over Coldwater Canyon. We'd go up and he would drive up this hill. And we had a cast get together. And I remember going there and then I parked my little shitty car, beat up car. And I walked down and it overlooked all the valley. I was like, wow, is this how it's going to be? I mean, this is how it happens. So, cut and paste, I shot that for about maybe 5 or 6 weeks. And I remember I was having such a wonderful time. And my mom was supposed to come out, but unfortunately she could not come because she was in chemo, this and that. And then we finished the movie. And then I said, this is going to be easy, right? This is it. I got pretty much my first audition or two auditions. This is going to be simple. Again, fighting for the lead that I didn't even know what I'm doing. And it got really difficult after that. She passed away, so I left the business for a while and went back to New York. I had to take care of her for a while, and then she passed on and did some family stuff. And I said, let me try to get back. And I tried to come back and tried to reboot the career, and then I ended up doing this showdown.
So did you have – again, you're an athlete. And it's cool to find out, because without talking to people, you really don't know, was this guy training to be an actor? No, some guy on the train said, hey, you have this look. So did you have – a karate background, or was it just that you're an athlete?
I think I always boxed. I boxed in high school. I'm pretty good with my hands. So that was a very good foundation for what I needed. And then I got into kickboxing, but not like I wasn't at a high level, but I was able to hang with all these guys and not even training in that way, which is fascinating because I was with the athleticism plus the hands, I was able to do anything that these guys could do pretty much. So then I got into it a little bit more and I started working on them. And one of the funny questions was when I went into audition for the Karate Kid, I remember meeting the casting director, and she says to me, she goes, you look like you're in shape. Da, 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 da. She goes, you're athletic. I said, yeah. And then when I got the part, I met Mr. Pat Johnson, who was the stunt coordinator, and I did all the, you know, the moves, no problem. I did all my stunts and started studying with him. I studied with him for about 2 years. Even after when the movie was over, I worked with him and went on to kickbox and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think the athleticism laid a foundation for me to actually be at that level without even training. And I don't mean to disrespect it. I mean that my flexibility wasn't nearly as good as theirs, but my hand speed, and I was able to move pretty well. And my kicks were pretty good, pretty forceful. So I picked it up quicker, I think. So being an athlete helps, trust me. It makes you look good on screen. Even if you're not great in the art, I look believable in a lot of the stuff. So it was fascinating, you know?
Yeah, that's all you need. Like, I interviewed a guy that, obviously, I'm not saying you should be older, but if you were 10 years younger starting the business, you probably would have been like that guy in the Canon film era. I interviewed Sam Furstenberg, who did like the American Ninja movies. And
Sure, I know him.
So that was that. They were like, we really don't want people that have karate because they might, in some cases, like cost more because they might have experience.
Exactly.
So like they would look for an athlete and can he do the moves enough? And no, that's perfect that worked out for you. And then it's cool that you did like Showdown. And then,
by the way, I did a Canon film. You know that, right?
No, which one?
I did a movie with Leslie Ann Down and Michael Parks called Inside Out. I don't even know if it's listed anymore.
I don't think it's on your IMDb.
It may be. I played a young cop. It was really funny. I'll tell you a funny story about that. This is how bad I was as an actor. I remember going down. That was probably my second job. Yeah, maybe my second job, third job. And I got cast as a young cop. I remember we went down to Corpus Christi, Texas, and I was playing Michael Parks' young partner. And, you know, I'm nervous. And we're doing a scene like this, sitting down at the couch, and there's like five actors in the scene. And I got some dialogue, and, you know, Leslie Ann Down, you know, they've been in the business for years. And here's a young kid, you know, and it's like really hot. It's like 130 degrees. I'm in a suit and tie. And they go, you know, you're doing your dialogue and they're in the scene and all of a sudden it comes to my dialogue and I can't say it. And I'm like, and they go like, cut, Michael, what happened? I said, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Did it again. Forgot it again. And I'm starting now to pour. Doug, I'm pouring sweat. And I'm like, finally, after like four or five takes, I finally remembered the dialogue and I never in my life ever dropped a line again. Again, but that was an experience to work with Michael Parks, which was he's a character for sure. And Leslie was great, and that was a Canon film, yeah, it was funny. And I don't know where that is, it's somewhere. I might not have it on my, I might have took it off.
Yeah, that's the end of Canon, like the hit, the way they I just watched the last Blockbuster last night, really good documentary, it just came on Netflix. But when I was talking to Sam, because he actually knew the guy that owned Canon, he told me like some really cool stories, but that's right at the end of it. Like 90. Yeah. So
our movie probably threw it off the edge. It was a terrible movie, but you got to work, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Leslie's great too. I interviewed her husband, who's like a cinematographer, and
yeah, she's a nice lady. Very nice lady. Beautiful lady. Very, very sweet. Yeah.
She was in the Pink Panther movies and
that's awesome. That is awesome.
So how did like the next Karate Kid, we talked about the audition that they were like, hey, you're athletic enough. So how did that come up after Showdown?
Yeah, yeah. So what happened was I was like toiling, you know, after my mother died, my father got sick. So I was bouncing back and forth to New York. You know, I got a job here. He got a job there. I'm like, you know, I'm trying to get my career going. You know, it was very difficult. Yeah. And I ended up signing with this really, really cool guy, Steven Adams, his small manager. And I remember I was working out at the gym. I was working out at Gold's Gym in North Hollywood. No, actually in Hollywood. And I heard my name on the loudspeaker. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I said, either my father died and they're tracking me down, my roommate or something. So I ran to the phone and it was him. He's like, listen, you got to get over to Warner Brothers. You got an audition for this movie, but da, da, da. And it was like no name or anything. He was just go over, wear jeans, T-shirt and a leather jacket. So I went, walked in and met the casting director. Joy Todd, who was a very, very powerful casting director from New York, and she was here in LA, which was cool. So I think she kind of got the vibe of a New Yorker coming in. And like I said, she said to me, you look athletic, da da da. So she called me back a week later, and I did the reading again. And then about 2 weeks later, they called me again, and they had like three or four people there. Producers, directors, Jerry Weintraub was in the room, Chris Kane was in the room. And I did my audition, and I thought it went fairly well, but I didn't hear anything. So I said, oh, all right. And then they called, and they said, listen, we love Michael. We want to bring him back in again and compare him with pair him up with a couple of girls and a couple of guys. And I've been through this with Showdown. I was through this with Book of Love. So I kind of was getting the idea of what this was going to be like. So I said, oh, here we go again. I went back. They did all the pairing. We did all the auditions. That was it. Didn't hear anything. And then a week later, they called me back one more time. And I remember sitting on the steps at this little bungalow, Warner Brothers, and next to the same guy that was auditioning against me. And I always tell this story because it's really fascinating. Like, it's in my head, I'm like, is this my shot? This is my shot. This is it. And I'm thinking, he's probably thinking the same thing. You know what I mean? And we're not more than like this far apart from each other, not looking at each other. So it's a very difficult thing to do. You know, it's a difficult thing. And you know, listen, I don't want bad for anybody. I just want a job, for God's sakes. I'm desperate here. Help me out. Give me a job. So I go in first and I do my thing. And they're like, great, Michael, wait outside. I wait outside. He goes in. And I'll never forget this. I tell this in all the interviews. He walked out with his shirt off and just a tank top on. And I said, you know what? This job is mine. So I hear my name, Michael. And I'm like, oh my God, did I not get this? So I start walking down this hallway, Doug, and the hallway seemed like it was about 5,000 yards. And it was like maybe 50 steps. And it's going, wah, wah, wah. I'm like, oh my God. So I get to the office and Jerry's sitting there with his feet up on the desk. And Chris is sitting, you know, standing next to him. And he goes, sit down, kid. I'm like, all right. He goes, so where are you from? I said, well, New York. He goes, huh? He goes, who's your agent? I tell him my agent. He goes, you got the job, kid. I literally, honestly, I jumped over the desk and grabbed him and started crying. Like, seriously, I had him in a bear crying, hysterical crying.
Wow.
And then I grabbed Chris Kane crying because, you know, I lost my mom. My dad was sick. And I'm like bawling. They probably looked at this guy and looked at me and said, what's wrong with this kid? But cut and paste a little bit, you know, later they found out that my dad was very ill. And they said to me, Michael, if you ever need anything, you go home and spend time with your father. Then we'll get you back here. So I was bawling, hugging them, this and that. And then I remember leaving and seeing this other actor walking away. And I felt like, wow, I've been there so many times in my career when I didn't get that part. And I felt bad. I felt compassion for him. And I understood his feeling. But I realized, you know what? Every once in a while, one's got to come your way, right? So yeah. I think my mother might have sprinkled a little love dust on me. And I got lucky. And I remember driving over Coanga Boulevard near the studios. And I was bawling. And I pulled over and I said, Mom, we made it. I mean, we made it. I mean, I can't believe it. You know, and I was living pretty much from hand to mouth. I'm living in like a one room apartment. I got a beat up car with dog hair flying everywhere. I mean, it was tough. And I became part of Hollywood lore and it's also about confidence. And you know, like you feel like you belong, you earn the right to have a conversation with you. You earn the right to be able to say, hey man, all the hard work paid off. Plus the financial was very nice too. But yeah, man, that was the day. I'll never forget it. And it brings me back to some really, really surreal moments that are, like I said, some really happy moments that are balanced out with some really sad moments. Cause knowing that your mom's not there and your dad's ill, but you got this great thing in your life. So it kind of pulled me up a little bit from that and helped me lift me up a little bit from my bootstraps. But, I'm very blessed, Doug, very blessed, and I'm very grateful, and I don't take anything lightly. People always ask me this question, Michael, how does it feel to be in the franchise And then how does it feel to get your ass kicked by a girl? So I smile. And initially in my career, I really didn't care too much about this. I mean, I cared. I did the movie at the time. But as I got past it, you know, I was trying to do like serious roles and independent films. I've done a lot of independent films that are really tremendous, that are like a lot of festival films. So I got lost in the shuffle of all this world of commercial films. So I remember trying to kind of run away in a little way. Not run away at the time, but after. And so when they asked that question, I say, listen, how does it feel to get my ass kicked by a two-time Academy Award-winning actress, Hilary Swank? Feels pretty good. How does it feel to be in a movie that's been around for 30 or 40 years? Pretty good. How does it feel to be the leading character, that the bad boy, in one of the biggest franchises in the world? How's it feel? Pretty good. So how's your bank book? Not bad from this. So I answer those questions and they look at me and they laugh. So that's the reality, you know? Very lucky.
And it's a cool movie when you think about who's in it. Like Walter Goggins?
Well, I didn't want to say, but that was the guy that was next to me.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, so at least he still got in the movie.
Yeah, he called and called and called and got in the movie. And you know, Walter and I actually were friends for a long time after. And then, you know, things happen. Like my stuff and his stuff, he got busy. He's working. God bless. He's doing very well. He's a good actor. Yeah. And then I got busy with my life. So we kind of have lost touch. But that was the guy. And then, of course, you had Hilary and Michael Ironside and some amazing actresses, Constance Towers, Chris Conrad. We have a great cast. So...
Ironside, man. When you think about the villains in the series, you know, obviously you have Martin Cove, like legendary. Terry Silver, played by Thomas Ian Griffith, then Sean Kanan. And you think about Ned and you think about, you know, the Colonel, like the way he plays that. When you really watch the movie in a different light, you think of that guy, you're like, man, he probably has some serious PTSD because he's insane.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's crazy. Yeah. Well, you know what's funny about, I always say this. It's very difficult sometimes because people always try to compare the villains and try to talk about the villains. And I can honestly say, honestly, from my heart, I think that we're really terrific. And I believe that in some instances, things could be caricaturish. I believe that when I got the part, I said, let me go back to the first Karate Kid and see what it's about. And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that was the best of the franchise without question. And I looked at the archetypal bad guy there and I said, okay, this is my part in this movie, but how do I make it a little different? How do I get to a little nuance in it? And what's really fascinating is that a lot of people caught on to that and got it at the end of the movie when they saw me change and had a moment at the end where he says, no, I'm not doing it. No. And none of those other characters got there.
No.
None of them got there. So it's really funny because I think that's where Ned gets his balance right in that moment. That's the whole movie for him, is that he gets the balance to realize that, no, this guy is no good. You know, he was a kid that was lost with no family. And he fell under the tutelage of this crazy guy. And he followed him. And then he realized that he wasn't. I don't necessarily know if he was trying to hurt Julie. I think he was testing her to the highest point. And then when she stood up to him, he respected her. And I think that's where it happened for me. It's like, and you realize, wow, this kid pushes him away. And people often ask me, Michael, that's a great nuance for this character because the other characters don't have it. So they mention that quite frequently to me when they write to me, you know, you had that moment at the end. Could Ned go with Miyagi's Do, or could and I believe he does. I believe he follows Miyagi, and I believe he ends up in life befriending Julie because you grow up and you things change and life changes and so but getting back to that, I believe our Michael and I are really, really strong together.
Yeah.
And I believe I don't want to say who's the best, who's not, but let's say that I think that we're a very formidable duo. Yeah. And I think that the actors in our film are very, very, very good. I'm very proud to have worked with them, all of them. And Hilary was, wow, you know, to think about the pressure, you know, this young girl has on her shoulders, you know, to carry a franchise.
Yeah.
And to continue a franchise that was such a massive hit, she was tremendous and very graceful and very, very, she worked really hard. And she was me too before there was me too in this world.
Yeah.
She was fighting a bully idiot like me, you know, and defending her honor and doing the things that she needed to do before there were women action heroes. So she was the first. So I think in that respect, our film is way ahead of any other film. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And just the fact that you're like, when you catch her and you basically say she was smoking cigarettes and just like saying like, hey, why don't we go? And kind of like, what's the make out spot? I can't think of the name of it.
At the docks.
Yeah. The docks. Just that whole line. But I think you're, like you said, a caricature. And I think that's why I love movie sequels, because if you look at any original film, you have like all the villains, but the next one you have to be, it's almost, it becomes a caricature of a bad guy. So even like the lines you say, is that something, would high school kids be smashing in cars or burning them?
I don't know if they, you know, I thought that was a little bit bizarre, the burning. You know, I was a little bit overwhelmed by that. But, you know, if you look at today, what's going on today, is it crazy? Because people are killing, you're shooting people.
No, I know.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think so. I think, listen, when I got the part, I thought I was fighting Ralph. What did I know? I had no idea it was a girl until.
Really?
3 weeks. Yeah, I had no idea. I thought she was the girlfriend. I was trying to hit on her and she was with him.
Was that the scene you were reading when you kept going back? Was it anything that?
No, the scene was when I grabbed her like that.
Yeah.
That's the scene that I only seen that I read.
Wow.
I didn't have the idea. I thought she was the girlfriend of Ralph or the girlfriend of the star of it or whatever. And then when I found out, you know, I think at the read through, maybe I knew the rest of it, or maybe it was there and I didn't realize it. I don't know. You know, listen, it's, even today when I watch Cobra Kai, I think that one of the things that I miss from the originality of Karate Kid is the essence of the actual importance of the spirituality of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Mr. Miyagi was so beautiful at and delivered it without any violence. And I think that one of the things that I think they don't see as much in the Cobra Kai is not that. For me, but you know, I just love the fact that the originals are rooted to that discipline of being, you know, nonviolence, whatever. I mean, these guys are flipping over cars and doing jumping off walls. And I'm like, wait a minute, how does that happen? Like, how long have you been studying the martial arts? You know what I mean? So I don't know. Maybe I'm out of touch, I'm sure, because I don't know what the nuances of today's karate are. But I like the spiritual side. I like what's really great about Miyagi and how he hangs over Cobra Kai. I think that's fascinating. And that's and Ralph being a little bit, you know, lost, and Billy. I really enjoy that. I think they're doing a great job with that. But Mr. Miyagi is very special. You know, I think you, as good as it is, it's not for me. It's not, no matter what it is, it'll never be him. You know what I mean? As great as he's there. He's there no matter what. He's just so beautiful and important, you know? So, to work with him is to work with a legend, an icon. And I can remember at the end of the film, Doug, we were shooting the last scene in the docks and the car, you know, we're going to blow the car up. And I remember that I got there early and the big cans were on fire and I was just sitting in that big, beautiful Jeep and I'm looking out to I think it was the St. Charles River. And I'm like, wow, I'm one of the luckiest actors. I'm in this franchise that's incredibly successful and big. And I was trying to take it all in, you know, and try to really, really digest what experience I was having. Because if you think about it, it's really pretty cool. So I remember we did the scene. And then a few months later, we had to reshoot the scene. And we had to reshoot it in Los Angeles. And I remember we did the scene and they cut and I got a little teary in the scene and Pat called me over behind the camera, called me over. He said, Michael, come over. And I walked over and he said, listen, he goes, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. It's great. And I looked at him and I said, wow. I said, and he goes, do it. Just do it. And that was the moment where he became a nuanced guy. And I felt like it freed up the character to say, there's a little change here, a little change. So he was really like a leader in that way, very supportive and funny on set. Just was, he's a special guy, you know, and to have those memories, to be standing with him is incredible. And I think that there is no Karate Kid. There is no Cobra Kai without Mr. Miyagi. There is nothing. He makes it beautiful.
Yeah. And he has one of the best, he has so many great lines from the franchise, but one of the coolest ones is what he says to Hilary Swank. And he says, I always say avoid fighting at all costs, but if you must win. And I'm like, that's so cool, man.
That's classic. That's classic, you know? Right? It's just that's what I'm saying. And the way he delivers it, it's like, it hits you. It's like the other one, ambition without knowledge is like a boat on dry land. I'm like, wow, that's deep. You know, you don't realize it then, Doug, you know, but then you think back, you're like, whoa, that's some deep stuff that he threw out. So, it's a joy. Man, I had to talk to somebody today, and you know, one of the kids, you know, they called me from Argentina. It was really fascinating. Like, we want Ned Randall back. I have a lot of fans in Colombia. We want Ned. And they started, you know, saying physically you're the whatever, and you well built, and you were the guy, and da da da. I was like, wow, you know, they must be just getting that movie. They must be getting that piece because they're starting to see it. I think we just got released here in the third one on Netflix. Ours.
Nice. I have it right here. Look at this.
Hey, there you go. Am I on the back cover? I better be.
You are.
Yeah, there he is. There's the kid. All right, there. That shot is everywhere. That shot is everywhere, dude. Oh, my! It marred my life, that shot. But the conversations were just, it was a great conversation. And you know what I find, too? Kind of like you. They're defending it now. A lot of people are like, you know, this movie's really good.
Yeah.
The first one is great. The second one's okay. The third one's okay, you know. But I think ours is equally as good as the third or better. And you know, it's not the first. The first one's always going to be the classic.
Yeah.
And I think it stands on its own. I think a lot of times when I talk to the kids and I talk to people and I say, listen, I understand that people have opinions. I get it. And you know what? If you don't like a movie, that's great. Don't worry. I respect that. But what I don't respect and I don't agree with is that you talk bad about the actors in the piece.
Yeah.
Because it's disrespectful because they gave everything they can. They did the best they could. They worked hard. It may not happen. It may not have come out the way that they intended or the movie wasn't as good as this. But just be respectful and then you can say whatever you want. So now I see the young fans like, no, this movie's really good and Ned is fantastic and Hillary's great and we need them back and da da da. So we'll see.
I think the people that trash things are like those, I hate talking, you know, I'm 34. I don't want to talk like my wife teaches seventh grade English in Jersey. Right. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about young kids, but there's like so many haters. And I think people do it. I think it's like in sports when they're like, so-and-so is the worst quarterback in the league. It's like, dude, the guy's pretty good. He's not the worst quarterback, but it's like,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. They try to like get like the light on them, but no, I love all movies. And to talk about like the characterization of how sequels change, just think about the third movie. Really? Like we just said about like the car exploding and everything in the third movie, it's grown men trying to like kill, like, injure a 19-year-old kid because somehow that movie is a year after the second one, which came out 4 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I personally, for me, I don't know. That to me is much more over the top.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, Terry Silver is a guy that I love his character, like Thomas Ian Griffith, the way he plays it. But he is a guy that is like, seems like the richest guy in town. and he talks about like dumping nuclear waste. And then he says, clear my schedule for 2 weeks. I got to hurt this kid. It's crazy.
And they all team up on the kid and the other guy. The other bad guy is like screaming. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right. Great. But getting back to the villains. So I say that's what is fascinating about what people are saying to me now. Michael, we love you. It's really nice to hear that. They love my character. And they sent me a picture, you know, me against the other villains that were there, like physically me against them. And it was really interesting what they had to say. And I thought it was fascinating. I said, okay, you know, and they're trying to stir the pot, you know, like, you know, nice. Would you take on this guy? Listen, I'll take on anybody. I don't care. Put me in the street next to any of those guys. You know what I mean? And also what I say is, look at the young guys that are in Cobra Kai. And look at me when I was their age.
Oh, I know.
So, I mean, here we are. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. So I laugh because in one sense, unfortunately, I only got a chance to deal with Hillary, even though I did beat up. Eric and I got into, you see my prowess.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be interesting? And people always say it to me, Michael, you should fight this guy. Ned should fight this guy. Like, who would you see me fighting and how you think I would do? I'll ask you that question.
I think you could beat Karate's Bad Boy because you, I don't know, you just had this prowess about it. Obviously, Marty Cove, the way he trained everyone, but now the Colonel, man, he was like really asking you guys to pick up a guy that was beaten and just beat him again. And another, like a student in his school. And no, that'd be cool to see you in it. And I'm sure you Google sometimes or people send you articles or tag you in
all the time.
But it's so cool that I didn't watch, I'm not going to lie, I didn't watch Cobra Kai when it was on YouTube. But when it got picked up by Netflix. Yeah, so somebody told me to check it out. And I'm like, just the way they did it is like really cool because you're like rooting for the bad guy. But I think why not have you come back, have Hillary, even in a cameo role or something, because that's what the fans would love.
That's what I think. It's funny. I got just yesterday, somebody sent me a big 3-page article on me on Screen Rant and has my picture with Terry Silver and somebody else. Ned should be in it. Ned's going to be back. And then I get a thing a couple of weeks ago in Den of the Geek. You know, he's going to return. Then I'm in GQ Mexico. Ned is going to be turning and with this other character. I'm like, all right. So listen. I agree with you. I think it would be really fun and I would be honored and privileged to be in a cameo or a one-shot deal would be great. Yeah. But I think it would be great for the fans and the franchise to have everyone together, maybe in one sequence that are honoring Mr. Miyagi. You see them all intermingling and meeting each other, like almost like the Marvel Universe and all that stuff. Stuff like that would be cool. So I do. I get calls. And people are disappointed. Michael, are you on this season? I said, guys, I'm out of touch. I don't know. All I know is I keep seeing my name being brought up and photos being sent to me that I'm in this and this. So it would be an honor and privilege either way. I'm grateful to have been considered. And if they're going to consider me down the line, it'd be great. I think I'm a great addition. I think I would bring a lot of intensity and a lot of athleticism and a lot of stuff with me. So we'll see.
Yeah. Have you still been since that? Are you still kickboxing? I know obviously you're still in shape, but are you still doing any of that karate kickboxing?
I'm not kickboxing, but I'm in shape. You know, I'm still pretty good. I can move. I can do my thing. So you never know. If they call, you got to be ready, right?
Yeah.
You got to be
ready. So after that, you're talking about like that was the commercial film and then you went, you know, you're doing a lot of the independent circuit. So you've done a lot of them, but one that really like caught my eye. And sometimes I randomly like check out some of them, but Pretty When You Cry.
Wow.
That movie and the cast, Jamie Kennedy in a role like that.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It was bizarre. That was bizarre. That was a really difficult role for me, you know, with Sam Elliott, you know what I mean? And it was really difficult. Keith David, I played a crazy, coked up guy. You know, it's difficult sometimes because when you're an actor, it's hard to, there's, you have to be realistic in an unrealistic situation. So you have to try as best as you can. And you have to have a teammate to play on that level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So sometimes when you run against cast members or actresses or actors that aren't willing to do that, it's difficult. So, it was a difficult experience, an interesting movie, a difficult experience to be quite honest, but it was amazing to work with Sam and Jamie and them. And Jamie was funny. We had some good scenes together and, craziness happens. And, the independent world is really fascinating because you can pursue things that you might not get a chance at in these commercial films. So that's why I chose that route. And really what I try to do now is a lot of the films that I've done in the last 10, 12 years have been like based on family dramas or something, a positive portrayal of not Italian American, Sicilian American roots or something like that. That I'm driven to character stories. You know, I love action as well. I've done a few, but I really like old school character stories. So that's what I've been focusing on now. And this is the film, my film Ritornato.
Oh, nice.
That is my film that's be coming out in about 4 or 5 weeks that I won a grant from the National Italian American Foundation, the Russo brothers from the Avengers Marvel series. Yeah, they gave me a grant to shoot my film. So that was pretty prestigious. So I'm really lucky. And we won a lot of film festivals. And it's based on a true story of me going to Sicily to find my roots. And it's a really beautiful story, a very, very family-driven story. You know, I'm not into the Italian-American stereotypical stories. That's not – I turned down a lot of parts in my career, not because I didn't want to play those parts. I really didn't want to do it. I got to a certain point in my career, Doug, I was like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore because they're only allowing you to do the same part over and over again. It's like, I don't want to do that. So I started to write and I wrote this movie. I have a full length feature that I have with it that I'm trying to get off the ground. So I'm very proud of it. I went back to Sicily. I shot it all on location in Sicily with non-actors, just the people from the town. And it's a beautiful homage to my mom and to my grandfather. And I promised my ancestral town, Limina, that I would do this, and I did it. And we've got a lot of nice compliments. You know, it's like I said, it's not an action movie. It's a character story.
Yeah.
But it's very honest, very passionate. We did it in 4.5, maybe 5 days for less than $8,000, whatever the grant was they gave me. Yeah. So by the time I got to Sicily, the grant money was gone. So it was coming out of my money, out of my pocket. But that's kind of what I've been doing now. And I've got like 3 or 4 scripts that are done that I've written since.
When did you start writing?
Well, honestly, I started writing about 15 years ago. And nice. About 11 years ago, when my sister passed away, I was lost. I got to be honest. I was lost. I mean, I lost mom, my dad. And I'm like, you know what? I gotta go back to my roots. So my wife, who was my fiance at the time, we took a journey back to Sicily. And that's when the story started in my head, because I had written something 15 years ago. I wanted to do as a one man show, you know, one act show, you know, with me as the character, some of the characters. And I started it in his book called The Artist's Way. And I started to write it. And then when I made my journey to Sicily, I came back and I was looking for that book. I couldn't find it. So I bought another one and I started writing. And then a few months later, I found the book, and exactly what I was writing present day was the same as what I wrote 15 years earlier.
Wow.
Crazy, right? So I went on that journey and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote. And a friend of mine says, listen, he goes, have you ever written before? I said, no. He goes, I sent him the script. He goes, this is pretty good. He goes, it needs a lot of work with the structure, but it's got a lot of heart and soul. So, you know, I continued to write. And then somebody told me about this grant that they do. And I kind of constructed it in a smaller way and I sent it in and I won. It's like, wow. So there I was. And I said, okay, here we are. And I shot the film and had the greatest experience of my life. And I'm so blessed. And I'm so grateful. And the people back in Limina, Santa Teresa, my friends. And then we're going to go back and do a second one. And I've written another one that we're going to shoot in Sicily. So now I'm very, very connected into the culture there in the town. I'm the town ambassador for Limina, which is really wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm on the cultural department of Sicily. So I felt like, Doug, you know what? I felt like I don't want to sell out my culture. I don't want to sell out my soul to be a guy that's stereotypical. Yeah, I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody, but for me, it just doesn't work. And that's not the way – and it's not about – I don't care about the money. Who cares? It's the love of the game, and what you want to feel good and passionate and proud of what you're doing. And for me, that's where I'm at right now. So I continue to go on that journey. And if Cobra Kai comes up and it brings me back to the mainstream, that would be great. Oh, yeah. Because it's so fascinating, because that happened when I had the success of Ritornato. And it's all coming together at one time with my past, with a commercial film and this little film that I did. All the fans are really helping me and getting behind me and say, Michael, we really want to support your film and we love you. Cool. And so the young ones and the older ones, it's been really, I feel really, really like blessed that people would even write to me or want to talk to me. It's just like, it's incredible that, you know, it's like when guys like you and have kids like me, he goes, I grew up with you, Michael. I'm like, really? I mean, wow. You don't realize that, you know, you don't realize the people you're touching. You're just trying to do your best. You know what I mean? And I met a kid from Florence who wrote to me, goes, Michael, I work out and I wanted to have a body like you. And you know, that I thought you were a great role model physically. I was like, wow, I'm so like thrilled. And then a lot of my fans, they write me, I'll talk to them, I'll spend some time. You know, I'll spend 10, 12 minutes, I write back. And I've actually established really, really wonderful relationships with them, because guys, we're just people. We're not like these people that deserve more or less than anybody else. I'm like, I'm just a person like you, and I'm thrilled and honored that we can sit and have a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, us actors sometimes start to get a little bit crazy. They think we're a little bit more than what we are, and we're not. I just want to be like you and be, you know, have a conversation and relate to you and see how your day's going. You know what I mean? So that's what it's been for me. It's been wonderful.
So did you ever have the opportunity to do any of those like conventions for being Ned? You did. Okay.
Yeah. So that's, you know, it's funny you say that. Somebody said that to me yesterday. He goes, Michael, you got to be doing these conventions again. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, because you don't understand what's going on. I said, I don't know. I remember I did it when I did the movie. I went, you know, all over the world, not all over the US.
Yeah.
You know, I did a lot of the conventions and car shows and stuff. That was great. Yeah, he brought it up to me yesterday. He goes, you should be doing somebody's show. I said, I don't know. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to start that again. I don't know where that goes, but maybe I probably should investigate that, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I'm saying you did it back then, but you haven't done it recently, right?
No, I haven't done it recently.
That's what I mean, because obviously with the world being standstill, everybody watched Cobra Kai, like you said, and then they had Next Karate Kid gets put on. Everybody goes to watch it. Dude, I'm telling you, for a movie like that, and I'm sure somebody will be reaching out to you for like those festivals or even like the online things, because yeah, those things are cool. And like, did you ever do stage stuff like theater?
Oh yeah. I did theater in New York. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, that was why I wanted to do the one act show.
Yeah. Know, okay.
On the stage. I was either not brave enough or not ready enough. I don't know why it didn't happen. It just wasn't time. So I'm contemplating that again. It's funny because today I was researching some stuff that I was, maybe I could shoot this downtown LA, because I'm in LA and this other piece that I wrote is in New York. So, you know, I continue to think how I want to pursue the stories that I've written. And a lot of the fans have written, reached out to me like with stuff that they would like me to do, like a movie or direct, because I directed this film. I got nominated for Best Director at the Short Film Festival in London. One best film at the Remedy World Fest in Houston. So it's crazy. So, you know, I would love to do some of that stuff. So if you know anybody, let me know. I'll go to Comic-Con or whatever they call that thing, or go out to a convention. I'd love to do it. Be fun.
The reason I mention that, because given your background, like playing sports, being an athlete, you're used to that instant gratification. So obviously when you score a touchdown, great play, the crowd goes wild. But when you do a movie, like I've interviewed people, that's why I ask if you ever did those conventions recently, because obviously you're a great guy, like contacting fans back to reach out to you. But there's some people that don't really get that, but there are people that love them. Like, I interviewed this guy that was, he was in a bunch of movies and stuff, but his big thing, he was the voice of Beast on X-Men, the animated series. So I was lucky enough, when I interviewed him, I asked him, hey, did you ever go to those comic cons? Because he talked about when he would do a movie, that's it. The movie's done.
Yeah.
Unless you sit in the back of the movie theater like for a week, you don't know how people really are reacting. So it's cool that you're getting those emails, because you're getting that, hey, you know what? What we did was, you know?
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. So 26 years ago, we didn't have social media and Instagram. So now get an instant email. I saw, you're the guy. Are you the guy? Are you Ned? Because they don't know, because I don't have my name on my website. It's Ritonato on Instagram. It's Ritonato_the_movie_. My name is not there. I have my name on Facebook, but I don't have that on my Instagram. So they don't know if it's me or not. So they write to me, and you have to accept a thing. And I read it first, because I get some crazy ones. I mean, so I know I can accept this. And then I write back, yes, this is him. Oh my God. Like the other day, a guy sent me something. He shared something, me against another one of the bad guys. And he goes, you should take him on. I said, okay. And I accepted it. He's like, oh my God, that's you. I said, yeah. And then I shared it. He went berserk. So it's funny. So, you know, that's a fun thing. You know, it's a fun thing for me. So.
Yeah. No, that's so cool that you can see that. Cause that guy that was the voice of Beast, he went to that Comic Con. It was like a reunion of all the people that are voice actors from that. And he didn't even, like, in his head, he was like, I don't know if people watched it. He goes, I went to a studio. He was living near Toronto. I did my voice, send the tape in. So he wasn't even with a lot of the actors for it.
Right.
He just loved his voice for it. Yeah.
It's a little difficult. Like with my film Ritonato, we were supposed to be in Italy at the Terramina Film Festival, which is a very prestigious film festival, and we couldn't go. I was supposed to be in St. Louis. I was supposed to be in Chicago. I came to New York, actually, and we were able to do two screenings in New York, but at a festival. But then after that, I was shut down. So you really can't, what do you do, right? So now we're going to put it on Ritonatothemovie.com is where the film will be screened. So yeah, Ritonatothemovie.com.
I'll put it in the episode notes and I'll share it out. When's that happening? In like 5 weeks?
May 8th, I think, is going to be the day we're going to premiere. That's my mother's birthday. So I want to present it on that day, and hopefully
special, man.
Hopefully the fans know it's not an action movie. So it's a really like a passionate, honest thing, you know, a personal moment in time. So, you know, Douglas, it's like time goes fast. You know what I mean? Time goes fast. And I'm having this experience with you, and it's really wonderful for me. I'm probably more grateful than you are, you know, because it's really bringing, it makes me laugh. It makes me think about all this stuff But getting back to Karate Kid, I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah.
So, number one, if I was to return at any cost, who would you want me to fight against?
In the show? See, I honestly, your idea like trumped everything I had in my head. I think that'd be cool. Obviously, they could do a scene with like maybe Daniel sets up like on maybe like Mr. Miyagi's birthday, like a memorial or something. And I think that'd be cool having everyone there to pay respects, because again, you don't know what happened at the end of the movie. Obviously you saw your character turn.
Right.
So there could be something mentioned. Maybe it'd be, how cool of a moment would that be? You have like you and Hilary Swank show up at the, wherever it is, and like a look, and it's like, whoa, they're about to, and then a hug or something, you know, like an embrace.
Yeah. That's all it has to be. It would be just that. It would be, you look like I could see me looking at her and I'm like, Pierce.
Yeah.
She turns around, you see me smile and I hug her and that's it. And that's the moment. People be like, oh my God, that's crazy. So that's what I get all the time. I'm fascinated what people say to me. Like I had this one kid from Spain. Beautiful, beautiful kid. And he wrote this long backstory of Ned. I said, this is the actual backstory of this guy. If they wrote this script, it's brilliant. You know what I mean? If they fulfilled what this kid wrote as a backstory, it's incredible. So, you know what? They know I'm around because they know I exist for sure.
Yeah.
So, in or out, in it or not, it's Hillary and I are legendary. That's it.
Yeah,
we're together in time forever. So nobody can change that part of it. So that's wonderful. But it would be nice to maybe cap it off and have a smile and be nostalgic one more time.
Yeah. And then I would be totally down for a Showdown reunion.
Yeah. Why don't you set that up? Why don't you set that up? Showdown 2. Come on.
Patrick, and I talked to Patrick because you've worked with him a couple times and you just know how he is. He's sitting in this room and he's just like
brooding.
Yes.
Yeah, he's I don't know if that's an actor or that's real. I really don't, because he's a little bit of a, I think he's real.
So one thing you mentioned before, and I totally agree, especially when you sent your email back and it's like Grazzi, I'm like, I really hope he's from the tri-state area. And this is nothing against anyone else, but it's so funny anywhere else in the country, if people have that like Italian American, it's so, do you understand what I'm saying? Like in like LA, obviously there's people that are from Italy.
There's a certain sense, Doug, of New Yorkers.
Yes.
It's like, and the tri-state people that are, it's this, it's part of it. It's in this, in their gene pool, that, because most of, especially for the East Coast, because a lot of Sicilian, a lot of Southern Italians went to New York. Most of them went to New York. A lot went to Chicago, but there's a big, big, big community of not only Southern, but Italian immigrants that went to New York, and their descendants are there. And also New York is, New York's tri-state area is the biggest, between New York, New Jersey, and whatever. It's huge. Philadelphia, they're a huge place to be. So yes, there's a certain taste of it, and it's really great, but it's also negative.
Oh, no, what I was going to say. That's where I was leading to, like when you mentioned like the Sopranos, or for me personally, like you felt it, you were on the Sopranos. So you're like, this isn't the way, really. Like I knew a guy in my hometown that was part of the mafia in like New Jersey. He was nothing like that. And I'm saying all guys have to be like that. But it was like me, when Jersey Shore came out, me and all my friends went to Mexico, and we said we're from New Jersey. And the way they were like, wait, you're not like those guys? And I'm like, those guys aren't even from New Jersey.
No, they're embarrassing. It's an embarrassment to this Italian culture. It's embarrassed to me as an Italian, a Sicilian American. And I can't stand how they carry themselves. It's disgusting. And I'm not shy about it, as you can tell.
Yeah.
We have so many, I'm proud of my culture, my Sicilian culture. We have so many beautiful things and beautiful history that these kids don't even know anything about. And that's my thing. When I talk to the younger generation, this is part of the reason why I did Ritornato, is because I wanted to inspire other kids to go back and tell a story about your grandfather. Tell a story about your family, good or bad. Keep your culture alive. Keep it real. Instead of letting it get watered down into this Italian-American cesspool of what you think it might be. Because when you go to Italy, it's a different world. I shot a few films in Italy, and I won a lot of film festivals in Italy, and I spent a lot of time there. It's just a different world there. It's not like we here in America perceive it. It's different. So when I see that, or I see Real Housewives in New York or Jersey, I'm like, it's so bad. It's just such a.
Right now.
It gives the culture a bad name, and it's like it's the same thing with stereotypical characters. Now listen, The Sopranos was a brilliant portrayal of a dysfunctional family that was Italian American. But the beauty of that was a dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
And then around it was the guys. But that was brilliantly told. But when you have guys walking around, and hey, don't, it's like, and then you get guys like, you see a TV show and you watch them, and it's like, you are embarrassing. Number one, number two, you're bringing down the Italian American culture because you're actually allowing them to make you a buffoon.
Yeah.
Because now today people are saying on a set, you can't say this about the Latin culture. You can't say this about this culture. You have to be this, but why are you acting like a buffoon? It should be the same thing about the Italian culture. No, I'm not going to. You can't talk down us. It should be equal. And this is what happened when people come to this country. 60, 70 years ago, they came and they were respected because they worked hard. They built New York. They built San Francisco. They built the subway systems. They earned their way into this society with hard work, right? But what happens is time changes and they get immersed in their, and the descendants get immersed and the kids get immersed and they lose sight of what their origins are and the traditions. And they get wrapped up in this pseudo Italian-American world that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And it's really not good. It's not tasteful. And so I implore a lot of the young kids to do homework. Whenever we have a conversation, do homework. I don't care if you're from Latin America or Colombia, Italy. Where are you from? Where are your roots? Because your story is as important as my story. And we need to keep that alive. And so, yeah, I'm answering that question is that it is an embarrassment. And yeah. I've turned down many opportunities to do stuff that I didn't want to do. And I did a few things that I was embarrassed about, and that's why I stopped. So that's why I chose now to just kind of focus on the things that mean something to me in a positive way and try to bring out a different point of view of the Italian culture, the Sicilian culture. So that's my job. That's what I feel like I'm here for now, honestly.
Yeah. So two more questions. Yeah, this has been great, Michael. One is, I meant to ask before. So the first time you went back to, you know, where your family's from, was there like a type of energy or did you feel like home? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I remember leaving the this fancy hotel in Termina, which is like a resort town, maybe 45 minutes from where my Limita town, ancestral town was that I never had been to yet. But I said to my driver, I said, Vincenzo, I want to go to Limita. He goes, Michele, why you go to Limita? Nobody goes to Limita. I said, I want to go. That's where my grandfather is from. He goes, okay. We go. So we went and we drove, you know, 45 minutes. Then we started to ascend up this winding dirt road. And I got to the sign Limina and I just lost it. Wow. Right. And I jumped out of the car and I ran up and I jumped up onto this cement pile and I put my hands up on the picture. And that's it. That's the moment. And it's exactly what you said, Doug, is like, wow. I felt this sense of belonging. This, I'm getting chills actually. Goosebumps. And I remember saying to myself, Grandpa, Mom, I made it for you. I made it back. So yes, I felt like that's where I should be. And that's who I am. And they've accepted me as part of their own. And they've rolled out the red carpet for me when I go. It's unbelievable that I feel like that I owe it to them. Like I'm so grateful to them that they allow me to be part of that. But they're like, no, we love you. You were the first one to come here and want to do something about us, about Sicily. And I'm blown away by it. And I go back. I went back for 11 years in a row.
Wow.
I planned to buy a property there, but obviously with the pandemic, I can't do it. But I also am working on my citizenship there. So I'm actually going to be getting some papers in the next 2 weeks. So I'm excited about it. So yeah, I felt like you said, I felt like I belonged and that my veins bleed Sicilian red, brother. I'm that's in my heart and my soul, really. So
now I'm excited to watch that. No, when that'll be out, I'll definitely watch it and I'll definitely put it in the notes. So another thing, I always like to ask people this question because when you know, I don't know if it's like Bruce Springsteen's like glory days, but like when you're in the greatest moment of your life, when you don't know that you're in it until you leave it. Did you have like the wherewithal, like when you were in these early movies or to like keep things like scripts and everything?
You know, I don't have scripts, but what I do have, and I got to be honest with you, with the loss of my mom, right? It made me really think differently in life because I have a video memory. Like I remember every little specific detail. So every situation that's happened to me that I felt like you just said, like there was this defining moment, I remember so clearly, like a bell. I mean, like really clear, crystal clear. So I have remnants of certain things like posters and stuff, but cool. The memory for me is so crystal clear. It's like this thing, like this video that plays in my head constantly. You know, like I don't have the bonsai tree that Mr. Miyagi gave me that died. You know, there's a few things, the t-shirt I still have, a poster. But mostly the memories are really, really vivid for me.
Yeah, that's good.
And I can recall them on a moment's notice, as you can see.
Yeah. And one thing I just thought of, I interviewed this actress. Well, now she's a writer. She wrote like a few Netflix movies. Her name's Tiffany Paulson. Does that
sure.
name her?
Sure.
She was one of because she auditioned for Hillary Swank's role.
I know her. I think I
like the final. Oh, cool.
I think I read with her. There was like three or four girls.
Yeah, she said she made it down. She was actually, there was another movie before that. I don't think it was Buffy, but another Hilary Swank movie. She was up for the role again because I guess they had a similar look.
Wow.
So, wow. Yeah.
Is she a gymnast or any sort? Was she a gymnast or some sort?
No, I don't think so. She was in Friday the 13th, part 8. That's why I interviewed her. And then part in eight. The conversation, she sequel. Mentioned that. I'm like, yeah, sequel, yeah.
Sequel part 8. That's not a sequel. That's a long one. That's 8 sequel.
That was the best one because it was in Manhattan, but it was really
there you go. There you
in
go.
Vancouver, except like 5 minutes in Times Square.
That's crazy. No, I like I said, I met a few other girls that were there. I probably met Tiffany. If I didn't, if I did, Tiffany, hello. And you meet so many people. I was so nervous. I probably don't remember
names.
You know, I was sweating half the time thinking, did I get this part? But that's great. That's fantastic.
You have a guy like Jerry Weintraub, you know, I'd be sweating bullets knowing, you know, what he did way before that point. You know, he was working on movies in the 60s, 70s, like big time movies. So,
dude, he's legendary. I mean,
no, yeah.
You know, he took us to, I never forget, we went to on July 4th weekend, the whole cast, we went to Kennebunkport, Maine.
Wow.
Right? And we met the Bush family. He was very close to the Bush family. George Sr., because he was, I think Jerry at the time was a Republican, so he was a, donor and stuff. It was a trip. And, he knows so many people who come to the set. You're like, wow. And it's funny. Oh, I have a story. One of the guys, actually, RJ Lewis, is a producer. RJ, I just touched base with him. He's at my friend's restaurant in California, and he's up in Agoura Hills. My friend's talking to him, this and that. And he's telling him, he tells him, RJ saying, I worked on this. He goes, my friend's in that. He goes, no. And he goes, Michael, I love Michael. So I pulled out a picture of him and myself and his son when I was training for the bull ring. And I have it. I'm going to send it to him. I just pulled it out. Isn't that crazy? So those are some of the things that I have. It's incredible. So I'm actually going to call him. I haven't spoken to him yet. But wow. It's memories, man. Memories.
It's cool, man. And you'll keep making them, People keep finding this movie. It's cool that it had that second or third life, with the Cobra Kai.
I want to say, Douglas, thank you so much, because without you and the other guys, I really am grateful that you would take the time to speak with me. You made me have some nostalgic moments today, and I really appreciate it, because without you guys, I always say, where would I be? Well, who would I talk to? Who would bring me to all these people out there? So I'm grateful for that. Thank you so much. And you're like somebody I know for 30 years now. I feel like we're good friends. So stay in touch with me, please.
Oh, no, definitely, dude. And then maybe if the world's, the pandemic's done, November, maybe a parade. I think the Yankees are going to do it this year.
Listen, if I come back.
Oh, dude, definitely.
Listen, I wish you well. You're fantastic. I hope your daughter doesn't hate me.
No, she won't. She's only 2 now, so I'm not going to show her yet.
She'll hate me in 10 years.
Yeah, when this movie comes out, I'll time it. So this comes out like a week or two before, and then I'll do my best on social media, man. I appreciate
it. No, you're awesome. You're awesome, man. Just to spend the time with you, and I hope you enjoyed it. And I'm glad you like Showdown. Will you send me that picture?
Yeah, totally.
I don't have that picture.
I took it from the movie. I went on the movie and just screenshot it, but
Send it to me. It looks like Reservoir Dogs. It's hilarious.
That part's the best.
Yeah, and if you talk to any other guys, tell them I said hello.
Oh, all no. Right? No, it'd be fun to reach out to those guys. But no, this is the best part, because this is when you guys beat the crap out of him, Matthew. Or he already said he wasn't going to talk to Christine Taylor anymore.
So this way, why don't you have a try to get us on? We'll all do it together.
Oh, no, that'd be cool. I'll try that.
I did another movie. I don't know if you saw it, with Don Wilson, Don the Dragon Wilson. Another martial arts. You should watch.
No, I know his name,
Yeah, Don has been in like, so many of these, small movies. So I played this character. It's hilarious, though. It's funny.
What's the name of that one?
It's called Soft Target.
See, I don't think that's on your IMDb, maybe.
Yeah. And also, AKA Crooked. Look, I have some good scenes in there. Some really great scenes. It's fun.
Awesome, man. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Thank you, brother. Ciao, ciao. Thank you for having me. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Meet me at the docks, McGowan.
Man, what a way to end an interview. Meet me at the docks, McGowan. Just shows how much love he has for a role that he played, you know, 27 years ago. And I love seeing that. I love passion and I love talking to Michael. So don't forget, Ritonato, the movie, May 8th. I'll put the website and the Instagram in the notes. And don't forget, your homework is to watch The Next Karate Kid. It's on Netflix and I gotta say, it's an experience. Watching it with sequel glasses on and really diving in, it's just insane. Michael Ironside is just insane, but you're gonna love it, and our discussion of it is amazing. So again, don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast, follow us on all social media at Sequels Only, and don't forget to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.